what is going on here? Because it kind of spoke to the lifestyle asset. I had never really thought of it that way, but that's kind of what brought us into the short-term rental, was the idea that, hey, this might be a way to kind of check the original goal for us, was to kind of move around, have a couple properties, but when we're not there, kind of rent them out. And then how do we do that at a high level? Like, we need a coach, right? We need a mentor around doing this. We don't really want to kind of learn from the ground up.
Hi, I'm Wyatt.
And I'm Grace.
And you're listening to Our Dad and your host of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with our Experts Corner interviews with short-term rental investors willing to let everybody listen in on their journey into the short-term rental investing game. Today, I've got my good friend, Mr. Ryan Gite. And Ryan, I'm excited to talk about your journey into this. And you've been building that portfolio for a couple years, and so it's always fun to let people listen in on how that journey's been. So I appreciate you joining me today.
Yeah, I look forward to it, Sean. Always good to catch up with you, connect up. And listen, every story is different, right? I feel like you hear one story, you heard one story, and every property is different. So it's always good to kind of connect up.
So true. It is so true. And yeah, there's certain amount of similarities, but every single story, every property is unique. And so it's always fun to just hear like how that journey went, because as long as I've been doing it, there's not one property or one story that's ever been the same. So it'll be fun. And so as I like to start these conversations, I just like to start with the background, excuse me, getting back kind of what pays the bills, where are you from, what got you interested, how much have you been doing in real estate before you got interested in short-term rentals, and just kind of take me through the background and then into the game of real estate investing.
Yeah, sure. You know, I feel like it's like a lot of other Vodacy members, you know, from what at least the ones I've met and connected with. Grew up in Maine, went to school in Boston, and then lived overseas for a little bit and came back and kind of been on the West Coast and East Coast. Throughout all sort of post-college, I would say, I've always been interested kind of in this real estate environment. Dabbled in it even a little bit, you know, post-college. I was living in Boston. I ended up buying an apartment I needed to live in and then ended up moving out and renting it to a boss. That was a bad idea. Don't ever rent apartments to a boss. But kind of dabbled in that, went to a couple of different conferences, I feel like, in my late 20s, and always sort of thought, like, how do I get started? Who's a good mentor? There were so many avenues to go. And I think at that stage, it was just really sort of overwhelming. And so it really kind of took a back seat, you know, until probably 15 years later. So 2013, I moved from the New England area down to the South, in the South Carolina, and then Atlanta, North Carolina, and over eventually into Nashville. And it was 22 when I had kind of, you know, it was kind of COVID, rolled the dice on COVID, left a relationship, sold a property, quit a job. I mean, we talk about the five major stressors in life. I did three voluntarily.
You got rid of all of them. It's like, I'm new starting, right?
I was like, the world's shutting down. This is a good time to roll the dice. You know, let's leave the relationship. Let's sell the house. Let's quit the job and let's start something new. So I think for me, it was a good fresh start to think about, hey, what am I going to do, right? And I had kind of always been in healthcare. So when we talk about paying the bills, a typical sort of W-2 is what I think of it, in the corporate world, specifically in healthcare. But I've never really had a drive to climb the corporate ladder. You know, if anything, it's probably the exact opposite, right? That doesn't drive me. I see a lot of the lifestyles and a lot of the folks that sort of sit at the top. And while I've had a lot of opportunities and avenues to go there, it just never connected with me. So I always sort of knew, how do you keep your job and mind a business, right? I think Kiyosaki said that long, long ago, right? And sort of like the thinking, well, actually the whole series wrapped up. Keep your day job, mind a business. And that business, I've had whitewater rafting businesses. I've done a few other different businesses. But real estate always sat in the back of my mind for me. So it was in 22 when I had kind of like, we had talked about this with Lily around the idea of, wouldn't it be cool to have four places? And we own them all, and we just travel the best weather. And we spend a couple months here and a couple months there and a couple months there. And then when we're not there, we just sort of rent them out. And I swear, the more we talked about this, the more the algorithm heard us talking about this, and up popped sort of this Vodacy, you know, this Facebook, Instagram ad, whatever it was. And then I was like, this is really interesting. And I think I dove in at that point, Sean, and listened to like probably 20 of your podcasts early on to be like, what is this? What is going on here? Because it kind of spoke to the lifestyle asset. I had never really thought of it that way, but that's kind of what brought us into the short-term rental, was the idea that, hey, this might be a way to kind of check the original goal for us, was to kind of move around, have a couple properties, but when we're not there, kind of rent them out. And then how do we do that at a high level? Like, we need a coach, right? We need a mentor around doing this. We don't really want to kind of learn from the ground up. So that's kind of what brought us to the SDRs.
I love it. And it's interesting where you mentioned, hey, listen, we're going to build this portfolio around, you know, where we want to visit, where we want to go. Like, I always talk about that, right? We talk about the lifestyle asset and the personal use aspect of it. It's funny how, you know, there's a lot of people right now saying, oh, lifestyle assets don't work. You can't use them and make any money. You can't buy properties that you like and make any money. You just got to chase the most investable markets. And there's a lot of chatter like that right now. And I completely disagree. And you know, because we talk to people like you and a lot of our membership group, that is the exact opposite. We do want to build portfolios that we are interested in and want to use and be able to do that. So walk me into those first decisions on where we were going to start, and, you know, and ultimately, you know, how did it progress from there since 2022?
Yeah. So, you know, good question. And just to double down on that concept and that idea, was there's multifamilies and fix and flips and, you know, the whole realm of like long-term rentals, of course, and nothing really sort of like, I don't know, nothing really hit home. Nothing was really sort of jazzy enough to be like, that's interesting. I really believe you could make money and do well in any of them. And they all seem to have kind of their place in it. But nothing sort of spoke. And I think it was one thing you mentioned on the podcast. You're like, it's not like you're going to pack up the family and take a trip and go see the multifamily in St. Louis or wherever they are. Yeah. Right? You're just like, nothing was really sexy about that per se. So the idea that coupled with, hey, I want to travel and I want to live in a couple of different places, and I don't want to live extravagantly, right? I'm not looking for 3,000 square foot places. We wanted to kind of have small places, right? Sort of luxury couple places maybe that we could go around. And when we're not there, how do we open it up to kind of see it to the other folks for rental? So I was living in Nashville at the time in 22. And a short story about that, I moved to Nashville in COVID as I rolled the dice just to kind of say, what are we going to do? So I moved there, I rented a property that was only on the market for rent because he was asking $700,000 for it. He couldn't get it. He believed it was worth more. Fast forward 18 months, my landlord at the time, we had made a couple of deals to say, well, I might buy this property. Right? Needed a lot of work to it. By the time I ended up moving out of there, he had a buyer on the market for 1.1 on that property, and it was 18 months later. So he couldn't get 700 in 2020. But by the time in 21, late 21, he was like, yes, I can get it. I can get 1.1. I wasn't willing to pay for that. Of course, the markets were crazy then. Yeah. So I moved out and purchased a property pretty quickly. And it was right after that is when I heard about Vodafone and started to think, okay, what do we do about this? I was in a home that was too big for me. It wasn't the right fit. We just sort of, it just didn't feel right. So that was the point where I said, I have a home. I'm at 2.1% mortgage, right? So maybe I turn this into an SDR. And that's when I joined Vodafone, did all the work to kind of do this. And then I kind of presented it to your team. And it kind of came down to like, hey, man, you're kind of in a typical tall and skinny home in Nashville, right? You're going to have to do a lot of work to kind of make this thing stand out. And I wasn't in love with the property as it was. So it was a good opportunity for me to kind of sell that, pull the capital out of that, and sort of reinvest it into what I was looking for. Was my personal residence, because in Nashville, we have a lot of strict regulations around what you're able to get for permits. So I was looking for an owner-occupied permit. And so I said, again, worst case scenario is my first one. If this doesn't work out, it can still be my home. So I had a double lens, personal property and then the SDR. And we shopped around for a little while on this, ended up finding a great property, and then kind of moved forward on that opportunity. Built it into an SDR. And did really well with that, kind of in its first year. And I'll come back to kind of some of the lessons learned on that. That then sort of prompted, okay, we closed out the year, and that was sort of rushed. I bought that property in September. I wanted to do the cost seg bonus depreciation, close out the year, get it into service. So first one, short time frame, it was throttled down. The good news is it was local, 15 minutes away from where I was currently living at the time. So I was able to get there and do a lot of work to it. Put it in service on December 1, had two rentals, maybe three rentals, right? Was able to kind of check all the boxes, followed the plan, and then rolled into 2020, so that was 23, rolled into 24, being like, okay, we did good on 23, we can kind of refocus on 24. And then kind of slowed down a little bit and just started looking at different markets because I couldn't do Nashville again as much as I thought I wanted to be there. And that led me into the Bourbon Trail. So the second property was purchased in the Bourbon Trail. Lessons learned on that one for sure. Like all these properties, crazy how you think you've got the plan and then you realize a lot of lessons learned through that. So that one was in July of 24. Took over or bought an off-market property that had existing SDR and existing rentals on it at the time in July. And then worked that one really hard to the end of the close of 24, which would be last year. And then that one, and then eventually kind of led into here early in 2025 into a market I have been interested in for 2 years. So part of the lesson there was, you know, don't force it potentially, right? Yeah. Like wait around until something happens. You're never going to get the perfect property. I believe that. And you'll never check all the boxes. But it took 2 years to find what I would consider the right property. And that one just launched July of this year in 25. So, July, like mid-July, we launched that in 25. So a little bit of breathing room for the end of the year. We're in the middle of the cost seg with this one as well. And again, lessons learned through all the properties. But to date, 3 years, three properties, kind of I think of it as slow and steady. But if I think of the setup, the time, and all of that that took into it, they're all kind of like very throttled down experiences, you know, once you're in it.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, one property a year. I mean, that's, it's funny. I have one of my, original members, come in and they sold an RV dealership and they had a bunch of capital and they were like, hey, we want to buy 60 properties, 6-0. And, we want to buy in the next 3 years. I want to buy 20 properties a year for the next 3 years. I kind of laughed and they're like, he's like, well, we got the money. We can do it. I said, I'm not laughing because you don't have the money. I'm saying, you know how hard it would be to launch 20 properties, 20 short-term rentals in a year. It would be, I don't think you could do it. And he looked at me, said, challenge accepted. And he said, oh, we're going to do it. And he said, are you up for it? I said, I'm up for whatever you want to run with. And they ended up doing 5 properties that first year and they were going nonstop. And it was, and so, yeah, it is kind of throttled down when even on that schedule of one property a year, you know, because there's a lot of work. They're front. This game is so front end loaded on the work that's involved, right? You're not having to spend all the time that you did this year, doing the Western North Carolina mountain property on Nashville's kind of probably set and forget and working on itself. But that first year, you're spending a lot of time there, and then you're spending a lot of time on the Bourbon Trail, and then you're spending a lot of time in the mountains of North Carolina. And so then you just kind of move up that time that you're spending on from property to property because it is front end loaded. And so before we dive into the lessons learned, because that's exactly where I want to go next, is are you able to use them? Have you been able to get to all three of them and be able to kind of enjoy all three of them still?
Yeah. And so they're each unique, right? In different, obviously three different markets, different sort of buy boxes a little bit, and also three different kind of ideas and concepts, right? I mean, we've strayed from the plan, right? The original plan, 4 properties, 4 different markets of the country, small in nature, kind of nice and cute and easy to get to, maybe a couple. None of them are that, right? But, you know, with the Nashville, the primary occupancy, it's kind of a 3-2 home, if you think of it, 4-2. The Bourbon Trail kind of came off market and sort of maybe rushed that process a little bit just because it was an off market opportunity. It was in the right area. It had good books. So we looked at that as thinking, hey, this is kind of a proven concept. Bigger property, right? 5 bedrooms, cabin in the woods, a lot of deferred maintenance, wasn't sure about all that. And then the North Carolina one kind of came a little bit better because it's where we wanted to be. We found a great property, good views, beautiful kind of privacy around that. Again, you don't check off all the boxes, but it kind of hit close to home. And that's the one that, you know, Lily actually did a really good job on that one. She went there for 2 months, lived there for 8 weeks, and then that one still has a hard time knowing people are sleeping in the beds and people are using the property. And why don't we just move to that property? So, yeah, so in short, we've been able to use each of the properties. You know, I've been to Bourbon Trail just last week and over to North Carolina for a weekend. So we have no problem shutting the calendar down for a week at a time or for a long weekend and use that, whether it's friends in town that want to go to the Bourbon Trail, friends in town for Nashville. I have no problem shutting them down. So I guess the take home for me there is they're not just profit drivers that I'm unattached to, right? They still have the lifestyle asset. Even though they don't meet the ideal requirement that we set out for, we still have no problem shutting them down and using them for a weekend, or friends are coming in town, or we want to travel to it. And so we have a great opportunity to enjoy them all.
That's awesome. And I love that added return that is there for that. It's hard to measure that on a balance sheet or a, you know, a P&L at the end of every month, but that's it's a pretty big benefit to be able to do that. So let's dive into the lessons learned. Let's go like property by property, because I'm sure there's multiple lessons learned on each property, and they're probably all unique, like you said in the very beginning. But let's start with Nashville, and you know, as you were navigating that one, first one in, navigating the balance between a personal residence and a short-term rental while you weren't there. And so let's navigate some of those lessons.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, some of the key lessons for Nashville was I was so I joined it right in, I think it was the summer of 22 for Vodacy, and of course I met with some key people, obviously connected with some people from my past that I hadn't even known, right? The Petries, right? The Steve Troy, and met some other great mentors, and I was really kind of jazzed up going through the training, talking to a lot of people. And I remember meeting some folks that came from Vodacy. They were in Nashville for a meeting and had dinner with the Steve Troy and a few of the friends. And they're like, wow, we haven't seen this energy in a long time. We've been in Vodacy for a while, but you're kind of fresh. So I say that to say this. I came into it like I'm ready to buy right now. I wanted to rush the process. And so I had put multiple offers on properties in Nashville because I was ready to go, right? I'd gone through the training. I was ready to kind of rock and roll. This is going to be good enough. We'll make this work. The numbers look good. And I was kind of sort of rookie, right? And I was kind of thinking, well, rookie of the year. Like, just let's get out here and kind of show them that I can do this. The lesson learned there was I had multiple offers over the course of months, right, on different properties, and every one of them sort of fell through for a different reason. I was actually under contract on a property, ready to move forward with it. We were just getting ready to leave for Maine for the summer for that, for about a month or so. And a property just popped up on the market. Called my agent, said, we got to go see this, but I got to see it today because we're leaving town tomorrow for 30 days. We showed up to the property, drove in the property, and I literally drove in. I was like, this is it. And within the next 2 hours, we had to cancel the contract I was already under legally, try to get my earnest money back. The timing was crazy. We moved into this. All that to say, Sean, don't rush the process, right? It's okay to be excited and ready to go, but if you're just trying to check the box and move forward into the next step, I think, like, for me, the lesson learned there was, like, it's okay to slow down and sort of pump the brakes. And that came back to reality in property three, right? You know, it dropped 2 years, right? I mean, actively looking, really, for 2 years. So Nashville, for me, was about taking some time. You know, it's okay. Let the process sort of work by itself. Property two, Bourbon Trail. Again, lesson not quite fully learned there because probably should have done a little bit more due diligence, right? This was an off-market opportunity and an existing SDR and what some might call a turnkey SDR. I'm now of the belief there's no such thing as a turnkey SDR.
100% agree with you there, by the way.
Yeah, it might have history and it might be operational, but there's no such thing as turnkey. You know, so a couple of lessons learned in that property was because I wanted to leverage the off-market opportunity, I tried to move at a pace that was outside of my comfort zone too fast, right? I don't want to lose the pocket listing opportunity. And it was with a realtor that was also representing the seller. And because I bought and sold several properties, because I thought I had good mentorship, and I do here in Vodacy, it sort of just, I lean too hard into, I know what I'm doing. We've got some good, the numbers look okay. I think I can make this work and I'm hungry. Let's move forward and do that. I should have had my own representation, right? Not working in my personal opinion, right? Not working with a realtor that had seller sort of disclosures around that and seller fiduciary duty probably to the sellers just as much, even though it was a disclosed dual agency. You know, because if you fast forward that time frame, 2 weeks into my ownership of that property, the HVAC completely blew, and it was because the filters had never been changed in 4 years of that realtor and that property manager. And right, so there's a lot of lessons learned in that. Tons of deferred maintenance, things that, you know, like the washer and dryer had been repaired 17 times. I didn't think to ask that question, but you would think that the seller, you know, would have an idea of that, seeing that this individual was a property manager as well. So there were two tightly connected to sort of make that move. But so that was another sort of doing more due diligence to make it satisfactory for you as a buyer. Don't cut corners, right? If you know, you should be asking the right questions. It's okay if the deal is on the table and you might lose it because it opens up. You got to do the right due diligence around that. So that was, you know, probably the bigger learning I would say around the Bourbon Trail property. Let me pause, see if you have any thoughts.
Yeah, and I want to highlight one thing that I think that a lot of people get really excited about many times, and they think it's those off-market properties, pocket listings, off-market. Nobody's seeing it yet. You know, you can buy this before I put it on the market tomorrow. We're going to list it next weekend if you don't buy it. And I think sometimes, as a buyer, we're like, I want to get that before everybody else does. And sometimes we want to rush into some of those things, or we think that they might be better deals than they are. And ultimately, sometimes a lot of those disclosures don't happen on those off market pocket type listings, because like you said, a lot of times you're using the seller's agent, and sometimes it's a for sale by owner that's going to sell it to you. And there's just things that slip through the cracks. And it sounds like that happened on this one. It is very, very common, especially on those types of kind of off market pocket listing deals, which I love them. I love hearing about stuff before somebody else does. Not, you know, like all of us do. Yeah. Right. And we don't want to compete with every single property we're looking at. But at the same time, sometimes we add in our own minds maybe a little more value to that than there actually is. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It absolutely does, because the seller had their idea of what the value was as well. Now, again, we bought the property, you know, with the furnished, although if I had my way, we completely, it just didn't follow sort of the system that we were learning, that we had experienced a little bit in Nashville. And it was a little bit more pressured to kind of buy it, operationalize it really quickly, and we'll deal with the setup and all of that stuff later. And I don't think I would do that again. I mean, I really kind of looked through that. And even if I had done my due diligence, I don't know. We'd have to do the numbers to sort of make that. I mean, the reason I share that is because it bought it with July, had 30 listings on the books from July to December. And once I took ownership of that, I had to actually spend all of the time, effort, and work to actually communicate to all of those future bookings as a reason to say, hey, listen, we're going to close this listing down. You're going to get a cancellation. I'm the new owner. Here's the communication. I know this sounds crazy. Here's why we're doing it. I had multiple conversations with all of those 30 essential guests, right? Proud to say we got 29 of 30 that actually carried through with that. And we promised them as good, if not a better property by the time their date came around, right? So that was the goal for us to do that. So a little outside for property too. But again, I think if don't rush the process and maybe don't stray from the process, I think is kind of less known. Because even though it's only 2 hours from Nashville, where I'm at located at, it's still a drive to get up there to receive boxes, to do all this. Yeah. I mean, to put some stuff in place. So, and again, the seller had their own value. So did I pay probably too much for the property? Maybe arguably a little bit potentially. Although, you know, my goal was to recapture those 30 bookings and to kind of keep that up and running right now. So ultimately, that was the property that ended up, you know, pushing us towards that 1% for the Bodicey Group. So we're getting there and still even setting it up. You know, we literally just had photos done last week to kind of reignite the property.
Yeah, love it. And I think that on that first property too, and you mentioned it even on this one, don't rush the process. Be like, it's okay to run fast and analyze properties and look at properties, make offers that work for you, but be okay with saying no to stuff as well. And it's, you know, every market and it just doesn't change. It doesn't matter whether it's a buyer's market, seller's market, whatever kind of market we're in, you're going to say no to probably more deals than you're going to ever say yes to. And you have to be okay with that and understand, you know, you're going to have, you said it perfectly at the very beginning. There's no perfect property. There's no perfect market. There's no perfect property, but we have to make sure that they at least fit and check the boxes for our property goals and what we're trying to do. And you don't want to get so like want to run so fast that you start to deviate from what those actual property goals are too much, right? It needs to still be within what you're really trying to build ultimately. And that gives you that gives you then like what you want versus what this property can provide. A lot of times the answer to that is, nope, it doesn't align, right? There's not alignment there. So I've got to say no to it and be okay with that and know that that's part of the game. When you're brand new and you're getting into it, sometimes you're like, maybe I'm being a little too picky. Maybe I'm not, you know, maybe I'm not doing something right because I keep saying no to this or this isn't going to work or, you know, and I think you have to understand that real estate's a numbers game, just like anything else. And a lot of the properties you're going to look at just aren't going to work. And so, and that's okay. That's part of the game.
Or Sean, you know, even when you're in the property, maybe you found the property, it's working out, everything's there, and now you're in the due diligence period and you have a very argumentative seller or a uneducated seller's agent, right? Or you have issues with the town and the permitting and understanding like what's going to be allowed, what's not. There was a few Vodacy members that I've been helping kind of communicate in the Bourbon Trail area that are having like almost like they're exhausted, right? Because they're like, we finally found it. We're under contract, and now the seller won't pay for this, and the seller's argument is about this, or the current, or the town doesn't even answer our questions. We don't know what to do on that, and it's like if you're trying to squeeze a round peg into a square hole, then the answer is no, and it's right. Okay. Right? It's like, yes, it's a great property. And if everything lined up, it would crush it. But not everything's lining up.
Yes.
That's the answer, right? Don't, yeah. It's okay. Just yeah. Pull out and wait around for the next one. I'll look around for the next one.
Absolutely. And it sounds like, and then like, let's move into that. That's a good lead into North Carolina, right? You waited around for a little while. Yeah. You knew you liked that market. You were looking on that market for a couple of years. And so let's walk into that one a little bit.
Yeah, so 2 years, you know, I mean, and this was kind of a market that we'd driven through kind of, we just kind of found this town. I've never been a Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge fan. I know it's an A market SDR, you know, but I've been much more focused in sort of those B markets, right? I mean, Nashville is, you're kind of allowed one. If you live in Nashville, you're allowed one, owner's owner occupied. So I wanted to capitalize on that because I know a lot of people want to be in this market and they can't because the non-owner occupied is very, let's just kind of cookie cutter type home. They're difficult to work, right? Our property in Nashville is obviously, you know, ranch, 1 acre property, backs up to 100 acres, very kind of rare sort of setting. The North Carolina one was 2 years. We looked at a lot of properties, kind of put some offers on some. It was harder to check the box because we were in a B market. We were also kind of looking for privacy, but not, and privacy leads with, you know, dirt roads up a mountain. And I just kept thinking, this is great for us, but a mom in a suburban with 3 kids from Florida is going to have a really difficult time, right, when she gets here at night and says, I'm not making another turn. Nothing's lit. It's cold. Like, I don't know where I'm going. So I kind of had to weigh that in to realize, hey, we got to make it accessible for some of the guests. So we kind of kept adding boxes that would be ideal properties. Again, it never exists, right? The ideal property doesn't exist. This one came around. I saw it. It came represented already, which posed another challenge that I had, was working with a realtor in that market for about a year and a half, almost 2 years. Really good realtor, really enjoyed working with him. But this property kind of came up and it came represented already. And so that one, not represented by the seller, but represented by a community I was kind of working with and some of the mentorship that was there. So this one acted a little more quickly on, but of course the seller said, hey, look, we don't want to accept the offer that was in place because your buyer had never seen it. Now, I've done the numbers. I knew the market, knew the area. Yes, I hadn't seen the property, but let's just get it under contract. I'm willing to kind of go see it. I think it's going to work. Seller said, nope, we're not going to take a, you know, and it's doing an open house this weekend. So 5-hour drive, you know, canceled some flights, canceled some work events, and then made the drive all the way there, met the agent just the property, and literally on the property called the selling agent and said, offer still stands as it is. We're at the property, buyers see the property. So that one kind of, you know, 2 years, it was like, I'm still kind of nervous. Like, am I rushing this? Am I kind of putting the square peg in the round hole? And you know, all these things kind of come flashing back. Is it deferred maintenance? It was an SDR prior to this as well. Now, it wasn't doing very well. It was managed by Vacasa. I think the numbers were roughly 40 to 50,000 from what I could tell. It wasn't really, you know, I had a better, much better vision for kind of working with that than what was there. But the sellers were moving out of state and moving out west. They wanted to kind of liquidate. Didn't really matter to me kind of what the reasons were. I just saw some of the potential on that. So that's where I started to kind of, once we got it under contract, really started digging into like, now we know nobody in this marketplace, right? And so a lesson learned there was, and I say a lesson learned because we completed the project, we have better contacts and that market, the furthest one from our home, 6 hours from our home, essentially. We have better contacts, better market, or better contacts, better friends, if you will, in that market than I do in Nashville. If my cleaner, plumber, electrician, handyman all left tomorrow in Western North Carolina, I would have a whole team B to come in and replace that. In Nashville, if my cleaner left tomorrow, I'd be scrambling to find someone. So it's interesting how, like, something so close, you think that you would have a big team, but there forced me to say, okay, the lesson learned here is it's so far away. I need more people on my team out there. Yeah. And that's what forced us in that due diligence period. And once we acquired the property, to actually build a really robust and a deep team that was there.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point that doesn't get brought up very often on the podcast. And I love that you brought that up, is because people always think, well, I need to do it closer to home because I can do stuff here. But I see all the time what you just mentioned, when it's right in your backyard or it's really close to home, we take for granted that we know everything here and we're going to be able to figure it all out. And so we don't take the time to build the teams. We don't take the time to get the contacts. And when it's far away, you know that that's a necessity. So it's what you're scared about is not having those teams. So you go build really good ones, right? And so it's interesting that you brought that up, because that dynamic is what you're really seeing, that based on that portfolio where you're located, where they're located in proximity to you.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. I mean, right to this day, I'm still on property one in Nashville trying to build the team out, right? Because I didn't do a good job of it kind of in the beginning. Or what I did was good enough, but I didn't have backups, right? I'm the backup. If something happens, I can get there and fill the propane. I'll go make the bed. It's okay. Like, it's close enough, I can kind of go and scramble to make that happen, which has precluded the idea that I need to get a bigger and better and deeper team, right? So we're still doing that right now as we speak.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. And it's and those of you listening, you know, we talk about these properties on throughout these conversations. You always, just as a reminder, we always post these properties in the show notes. I always say success leaves clues. Go check these properties out that we're talking about, so you can kind of visualize and see where they're at, what they're doing, and how they're performing, and being able to see these properties. And so we'll always, as a reminder, post those. And so, Ryan, so you said four properties in 4 years. Are we like still on that? Are you still going to stay on the one property a year track? Like, what is looking forward look like?
You know, I think the idea, this last one, the timing felt smoother and better. So this was kind of looking for 2 years. But if you think of it, you know, we acquired it in April, kind of April, May, June set up, right? Those 3 months was a good time kind of prior to the summer. Which was a busy season in that marketplace, launching in July, working through some of the kinks in July, and then just kind of letting it ride and kind of work through some of the, you know, now we're into fall, and this is, you know, we'll see how the kind of fall goes with that. But I like that timing of it versus back to property one, acquiring in I think it was August or the end of September, scrambling in October, November, getting it into play for December. Of course, that was one of our last years for the depreciation, right? Or at least like as it stood then. So property four, I would love to kind of pick something up sometime in the spring, you know, again, kind of looking. Now, I don't have a market in mind, and it's bringing me back to step one, right? It's funny because I was just telling Lily that night, I'm like, I think I got to go back and look how to use AirDNA, how to go through. We got to kind of go back to like what markets, where do we want to be around all of this? And I'll say one other thing, Sean, that this is like, you know, each of these properties, with the exception of probably the third one, we did a much closer, actually, we probably did follow really all of the sort of the bottom steps, right? Property one, we did not, right? And remember when you showed up to the property, I'm like, there's no artwork on it. We literally just got artwork up like 3 weeks ago. And, you know, the advice I'd give myself or anybody else is like, just follow the process, right? I mean, had we just done the artwork, now we didn't have that time frame, right? Because we were launching in December, just get it up, get it live, get it going. We had to do that. But I shouldn't have waited a year to order all the artwork that I wanted to order. It was right. It was a nervous sort of like, what do we do? Is this working? My first one, I wasn't quite sure. So fast forward to property three, we did all the right. We got it all up and running. Do not put that thing live. Now we had a little bit of time zone, right? A little bit of time cushion around this to say, let's get the artwork. Let's get the proper photos up. Let's do this the right way. So when we push live, it's live and we can step away and be like, here it goes. Right. We don't have a whole lot of homework to do after. There's always things to do with the property. Don't get me wrong on that. But from a big lift or the program itself, like it was largely done on that. So, so the fourth one, we'd love to kind of see something. In fact, it's on my to-do list. Talk to Sean about Broken Bow. Talk to Sean about other markets. So, I mean, I'd love to do something in coming up in 2026. I mean, I think we're good for this year just to not rush the process and kind of ride through this year. But starting in 2026, like, we'd love to do another one.
Love it. Love it. And yeah, I always feel for those people that are fourth quarter trying to get that property in service to make sure that everything is all those boxes are checked. It's a stressful fourth quarter when you're trying to launch in December. Yeah. Right. And so, I'm with you. I like doing that and getting those properties done earlier. And you really hit on a point that I always try to make too, is just get the setup and getting these properties launched correctly. It does 95% of the heavy lifting for you through the launch or marketing for the next little while. And doing it on the front end, while it's expensive and overwhelming and time consuming, it just works better. The algorithms are more in your favor. Everything works better when you launch it correctly, because you did all the heavy lifting on the front end, and now you can let that property start to perform, start to see how it's going to go. And like you said, there's tweaks to be made on every property always. And so, when you can get most of the heavy lifting done, it's going to get done. And like the Nashville property is a perfect example. You're like, I just got my artwork done. What happens is, once you kind of get it good enough and it starts to launch, we don't go back and do the other things that we were going to do. You just let it sit and we don't go back to it. And so people always ask me, hey, I'm ready for number two. I said, make sure you maximize number one before we go to number two, and maximize number two before we go to number three.
John, it's like, this is a perfect example. Like, because we did property three, right, let's say, at better than the other two, we finished the great photos. I saw the photos came back. And as a part-time photographer, right, I had a hard time spending almost $5,000 on photography, essentially, right, to say, well, I could do this, but I don't have the time. I don't have the drone. I don't really want to do all that, right? And it's outside the scope of what I do anyway. But I buckled down. I paid somebody to do it. Once I got the photography back, professional photography back, I was so blown away and so excited be able to put that in the listing and launch property three right. I literally said the very next week to the same photographer, how do I get you back to property one and property two, which I should have done a year ago and 8 months ago, right? And here we are, literally, he just completed it last week. He's like, okay, we'll figure a way to do this, you know? So here I am spending the same amount of money that would have cost maybe even more to this day, honestly, than if I would have spent the money 2 years ago to do that. So to your point exactly, just do it right the first time, right? Because here I am on property three. I'm like, why didn't I just spend the $4,000 or $5,000 on the photography property? What could that have done in the last 2 years?
Exactly.
What could it have done in Bourbon Trail in the last year? So now here I am, excited to upload the new photography and relaunch, essentially, right? Property one and property two. I should have just done it then, you know? Yeah. So again, lessons learned 3 years in.
Well, better late than never, but it is, and that's why we have these conversations. So people that are, somebody that's walking into the game right now, they're like, okay, I'm going to do it right from the very beginning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Awesome, Ryan. Well, listen, at the end of every episode, I love to ask the question, and we've covered a lot of lessons learned. So it might be just an exclamation point on something we've already covered, but I always like to say, if you go back, you know, you're working on property number four. If you go back to your younger self, diving into this, is there a piece of advice that you wish you knew? Is there something you wish you could tell yourself that you know now that you didn't know then?
Man, you know, it's like, if I'm being real honest with myself, and this is just me with me, right? It's me with myself. Yep. It's like, I think back then it was like, just jump into it sooner, right? Take the risk, jump in, right? It's easy to sort of, it's like you can consume so much YouTube and courses and conversations, but you got to get on the ice, right? And you got to actually take the shot to see if any of this sort of works. So probably just pushing yourself off the fence sooner. Now, that's not being reckless, right? I mean, but that's partly why you join a group. You have a mentorship. You have partners around this to help guide you through this. So if you got the mentorship, and what I was a victim of is definitely analysis by paralysis more than once, probably a dozen times, whether it was short-term or long-term, whatever it was. And that's why in this market, I would say, if you got a sort of, you know, you want to try to do this, just jump in but leverage your partners, right? Leverage your mentorship. Leverage the people that are here in the team that really want to help. And I mean, listen, I've got some of my best friends in Bozzi. We call each other up. It's like, even in the same market, right? By all means, we're competitors if you really look at it on the books. And we're sharing more transparent things, from finances to contacts. So there's a group here to help out. And I think that's what I would probably tell myself is just to say, hey, man, just jump in. Just get in, take the shot, and start learning, because here we are multiple properties in. I'm still learning through all that. And then having that experience, the other piece of advice I would give myself is just don't try to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah.
Right? The program is here. Buy the photography when you're ready to go, not 3 years later, not 2 years. Like, it's working for a reason, right? I mean, right. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. Kind of lean into that and not thinking you could tweak it or cut corners to do a little bit better job, right? It's like, Unless you really like setup, or unless you really like photography, unless you really like lean into the people that kind of do that better or do that for you, right? At least, then you can still have some say. So yeah, there's always learning.
Love it. I love it. I mean, it's such a common thing that all of us think about is like, man, I wish we would have done it sooner. But at the end of the day, there's always risk involved. Nothing's perfect. And you're going to have to, like you said, you got to get on the ice and you got to take the shot and you got to get in the game. But there's no reason to go figure it out on your own. There's people that want to pass that baton to you so you can run faster and farther than they've ever run. And so you can, you know, a lot of blueprints and recipes and successes that you can copy and iterate and then make even better, right? And that's what's fun about the game. We're always learning. We're always raising the bar, but you don't have to go reinvent the wheel by any stretch. And I completely agree with you. So Ryan, this has been awesome. I'm going to put a plug in for your Maine. I was just up in Northern Maine, spent a week up there. So we might have to look up there for your for that fourth property. I don't know. You get back in the roots.
Man, we have looked forever. Of course, I talked to Troy Petrie and Missy about this. You know, obviously we Troy and I grew up in Maine, neighbors as it turned out. And we keep looking at it. It's a very seasonal market, right? The numbers are hard to sort of make there, especially if you want to capitalize on the lifestyle, right? You think about a cabin on the lake somewhere. I want to use it for the month of August, which is the most gross revenue. So You got to balance that lifestyle finances, right? And neither one is bad. It's just you got to balance that out. But I'm not really letting go of that sort of New England market, right? I've migrated from just pure lake to could we get someplace that's more lake and mountains, right? Kind of suffices both. Maybe you're not right on the lake, maybe you're not right on the mountain, but what if you're between a lake and a mountain? Or what if you're on a lake near a mountain or on a mountain near a lake, right? So I think kind of capitalizing a little bit more on the seasonal aspect and then be willing to kind of forego some income so you can enjoy it. It's okay. Right.
Exactly. And you're right. In those really seasonal markets, you are going to forego a little bit of income. It's easier to not really affect your income when you have a little bit more wider seasons. You got some, you know, some longer peak seasons, some not as short shoulder seasons or slow seasons. But when you get into those markets like Maine or some of those markets where it's like Memorial Day to Labor Day, right? And that's where you make your money. You know, you take away a few weekends during that period of time, you can significantly cut the revenue down. So it's all things to consider. And those are all the lessons learned in underwriting and understanding. And even just me mentioning that and then hearing you say, here's the things why it's keeping me away. We're looking at it, but this is why I love that. Right. And those are the things that a lot of new investors, they just don't think about. And so be around other people, like you said, that are doing this and, you know, preaching to the choir for our listeners, cause they're joining us on these conversations, but you know, pay attention to them and don't reinvent it. And so we'll, I still like Maine. I'm going to introduce you to one of our members that just sent me a text. I'll read you this text today from his Maine property. He said, I'm doing a toast to you today, Sean. This actually came to me as a text this morning. Saved $65,000 on my 2024 taxes from my Vodacy Cloud cabin, on track for 135 revenue on a 750 purchase price, low maintenance overhead, self-managed, hugely profitable. So, and that's in Maine. So we'll, I'll have to introduce you to him.
Love it. Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. Happy to talk New England, Maine all the time. Listen, we get up there every single summer, you know.
It's so awesome, isn't it? I've never been there. First time was a couple weeks ago and boy, it was beautiful. I was perfect time for the leaves changing and it was just, it was like awesome.
Where'd you go? Did you get to Acadia at all? Or did you
I went up to Patton, Maine, which is north. I spent a week up there in Patton at a camp up there and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you were right in peak season too, peak foliage season.
Oh yeah, it was beautiful. I mean, beautiful. Like, yeah, I couldn't have picked a better time. It was, you know, 70 degrees in the daytime, you know, low 50s at night and leaves are perfect. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's good. No, great place. And again, there's always kind of markets and there's, you know, a lot of things to kind of talk about from all these different areas. So
yeah. Cool. Yeah, it's awesome. Well, awesome, Ryan. I appreciate you joining me, brother. And those of you listening, we appreciate you spending your time with us. We know it's valuable. You guys know that we don't run a bunch of ads on this. When you're listening to this show, you didn't hear a lot of commercials. And so the only way we grow this show is if you guys share it. If you know somebody else that wants to be a part of these conversations, share the show. Those things are very much appreciated. If you have more than 30 seconds, like it or review it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. And the final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today to start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.